Welcome to Electric Enthusiasm, the podcast where we celebrate unironic enthusiasm. I am a cosmopolitan cetacean. Kate, now I'm going to say that better. I'm a cosmopolitan cetacean. I can English. I can Latin. I'm just going to go with that. Katie Cobalt.
Most confused intro yet. And I am Alexander Kyrgios, and I just had an intro in mind. I just had one. Oh yeah. You made me forget it. You confused me.
That's my intro. I'm gonna cut it.
That's the intro. Tell us, what are we doing today, Katie? I'm already jumping
okay.
the gun here.
Okay, I could do that.
Katie, tell us how this works.
In each episode, one of us presents a topic that they love, but the other knows little to nothing about, and tries their level best to spread that enthusiasm to the other host and to you, the listener. Sometimes we have guests on who are super excited about something we know nearly nothing about.
We also have the moment of meta, where we nerd out about enthusiasm itself and talk a little bit about why it matters and how you can live a more enthusiastic life.
Hell yeah, because we think the world needs more enthusiasm. So share yours with us on our website, electricenthusiasm.com, or on our Instagram, @electricenthusiasm. Tell us what you're excited about these days, or you can even send us an email at hello@electricenthusiasm.com.
Yeah, switching it up. I like it. The confusion is total.
Absolute chaos. On the intro. Absolute forking chaos.
Oh my God. Alrighty, Katie. So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about orcas.
Yes,
they're
orcas.
So cool. I have a quote for you. This is from the Roman scholar Pliny the Elder. He wrote this in the 1st century AD, and it's his description of an orca.
He says, "A killer whale cannot be properly depicted or described except as an enormous mass of flesh armed with savage teeth." Alrighty then.
So it is my goal by the end of this episode to help broaden your horizons, and so that you will not see orcas as a mass of fleshy teeth.
That sounds like a good plan. We like to start with the facts first around here, Katie. What should a person know about orcas?
The Latin name for orca is where the word orca comes from. It's orcinus, or I cannot Latin. I honestly cannot Latin. Hang on, I'm going to make you say it. How would you say that?
Orcinus orca.
Orcinus orca.
I'm totally guessing here.
Neither of us Latin. This is great.
Exactly.
So I wanted to look into where the word orca came from, because I knew them as killer whales. I don't particularly like the name killer whale because it's incorrect in so many levels. Killer implies morality. They don't have morality. They're cetaceans. They don't have morality. And two, they're not whales. They're dolphins. So that name is a lie. So killer whales, it's a lie of a name. And I was thinking also a bit mean, a bit harsh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I looked into the Latin name. Orcinus translates to belonging to Orcus. Orcus is the Roman god of the netherworld.
So devil dolphins.
Pretty much.
Hell dolphins.
Orca translates to like large bellied pot or jar, which is just body shaming really at the end of the day.
Yeah, those are not good names.
Really?
By the way, do you know what orcas are called in Danish?
Ooh, no, maybe that's a better word.
I will tell you, I'm going to write it in Danish, and you're going to have to guess how that is pronounced.
For those of you who are unaware, Danish is the dumbest language ever.
As a Dane, I can only agree. Here, what does that say?
I'm going to go for Spekhugger.
Hey, that was nearly perfect.
What?
Yes, Spekhugger.
I've hung out with you for long enough where it's working. I'm learning Danish.
poor you.
How does it translate?
There's a cool story behind it. So spek in Danish is blubber.
Yeah.
And to hugge is to steal something. And the name was given by Danish whalers who were really fucking sick and tired of orcas, because when they killed a whale, a pod of orcas would swoop in and eat all the blubber off the whale before they could land it.
I have so many stories like this for today.
So the Danish name is literally blubber stealer, or even better, blubber robber.
Blubber robber? Oh, I love that. That's so good. Okay. Oh my gosh. We're off to such a great start.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I found out they are technically known as a cosmopolitan species.
Is that what we're trying to say in your intro?
That's what I was trying to say in the intro. So in biogeography, if a taxation has a cosmopolitan distribution, it means that its range extends across pretty much any habitat that's appropriate for it around the world. Mm-hmm. So orcas can be found in all of the world's oceans in a variety of marine environments, from the Arctic to Antarctic to tropical seas. They are everywhere. They are cosmopolitan.
I like that. They've been in the news in Denmark recently because they're now sighting orcas in Danish waters, which normally never happens. But now we have them here as well. Watch your blubber.
They are also apex predators. They have no natural predators, and they are completely badass and awesome in so many different ways.
Yeah, they are.
So when I say facts first, today is mostly just going to be cool facts about orcas. Mm-hmm. That is what today is. So since it's not really going to be facts first, it's going to be facts throughout, to be perfectly honest with you.
Okay. Facts on facts.
But we're going to talk about three awesome reasons why I think orcas are really cool. We're going to talk about their social structure. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about them smart. They're so smart. And then I'm going to give you a specific example of their smart with the fact that they are physicists and they understand basic fluid dynamics. Let's start off with their social structure. Because these are highly social animals. Basically, there are kind of two types of orcas. You have resident orcas that, like, they have a home. This is their place. This is where they drink raspberry juice and vibe.
Back to the Moomin trolls from the last episode.
Then you have the transient orcas, and they're the ones that will be migratory. They're the most cosmopolitan of them all. And so they have different social structures based off whether or not they're residential or transient. The resident ones are the ones that are super, super cool because they have a really interesting and complex social structure and often have communication and education passed down generations, which have some biologists wondering if this is an example of animal culture. There's a particular group of resident orcas that have been studied in the eastern North Pacific, and they have really complex and stable social structures. So they don't change. They are pretty set in the ways. So you will have a matrial line. And like with many animals, the orca social structure is matriarchal. So it's based off the mother line. Mm-hmm. So females can reach the age of 90.
Whoa.
They can get really old. And so as many as four generations will travel in a line together. So these matrilineal groups are super stable. Interestingly, orcas, like humans, also undergo menopause, which means that they can live for decades after they finish breeding. And so this means that grandma will stick around and help raise the kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I really love that.
Wow.
And so in these matrial lines, they're super tight-knit. Individuals may separate only for a few hours at a time, maybe to mate or to forage, but generally they are together for all time. They don't really like to be separated from each other.
And is there a leader of some sort in this group, or is it more of an open society?
There is a leader. It'll be the matriarch. Whoever is the oldest female is in charge. So you have matrial lines. This is like the closest knit. This is like the family unit. But closely related matrial lines will form loose aggregations called pods. So a pod can consist of one to four matrial lines, and these are less tight-knit. A pod might separate for a couple weeks or maybe a month or so at a time, and they're a little bit more loosely collected, but they do try and stick together, and they also have relations between them. There's often family ties.
Right.
So you have matrial lines, pods. The next level up is clans. For resident social structure, this is the next level. There's another level after this, of course. These are composed of pods with similar dialects because they have different accents and different language.
Depending
on the clan. So you can identify a particular clan of orca based on its vocalizations, which is so fucking cool. There will still be some relations, like family relations here. You'll have like an older matrial heritage. It won't be like so direct, like, oh, my cousin's over there. It'll be like, my second cousin twice removed is over there. Clan ranges do overlap because at this point now you have multiple pods together. So the ranges will. And then the final layer is community. And this now consists of pods that regularly associate one another but share no maternal relations or dialects. So thus far, all of the previous levels below, there has been some maternal relations or some dialect similarities, but it also shows that different orcas, even if they don't necessarily speak the same language or are no way related, will still hang out and still chill they're still good with each other. We're friends. This is cool.
I like it. It's like family, village.
Yep.
Yeah. Country.
Yeah.
EU.
Right? I find it so interesting that they also have this like structure that's very similar to us.
When you say dialect,
yes.
How does that work in Orcas?
Ooh, hang on. I'm going to see if I can get the thingy.
Sounds like a squeaky door.
Yeah.
That was a fart.
I don't know if you can hear this, but they produce three types of sounds. You have clicks, whistles, and pulsed calls.
Okay.
And a dialect is composed of specific numbers and types of repetitive calls. They are complex and they are also, again, stable over time because the newborns will produce similar calls to their mothers. And they will learn the dialect and like the different calls you're supposed to make. It's like language, right? The yeah. reason this words are words is because you recognize that this series of sounds in this order is communication. So they will have a series of sounds in a particular order, which is the dialect that they would use within that pod or within that matriline. Mm-hmm. Because of this, we feel like they have what we call dialects.
That is super interesting.
Right?
That, that is so cool. And that might also explain why they keep the older females around in the pod, even after they can't produce offspring yep. anymore. Because in a lot of species, you know, once you're too old, you're out.
Yep.
Like lions, the younger male challenges the older male. If the older male is not strong enough, he gets killed or kicked out. But here, they get to stick around. And part of that reason why that is an advantage might be that there are still repositories of that learning
yeah.
in language and whatever other skills are relevant to the, especially to the resident orcas, right?
Yeah. We'll go into this later. They are pack hunters. So having extra bodies around to help hunt is very yeah. useful.
Sure. Sure. Especially an experienced one
mm-hmm.
who knows how shit works and gets exactly. shit done. Yeah. That's amazing.
My final fun fact about orcas as a social species is that there has been evidence of orcas of like the same sex and age group playing together. So they engage in physical contact, synchronous surfacing, where they'll both pop up at the same time. And these behaviors do not occur randomly. They occur specifically between members that like each other or do it together frequently. If you watch a playground of small children, right, you're going to notice they kind of pair up and they hang out together. Scientists have noticed similar pairing up of orcas of the same sex and age group,
mm-hmm.
which implies they make best friends.
They have playmates.
They have playmates and they have a preferred playmate. They have a bestie.
Yeah.
They have besties.
Oh, that's adorable. And the yeah. fact that they do play, and they very obviously do, they have a lot of behavior that has no, on the surface, no practical purpose, but no. must be played.
Yeah, I love yeah. it. I love it so
wow.
much.
That is so cool.
There's also transient pods, which are less complex. Mm-hmm. It often consists of like one adult female and some of her offspring. Interestingly, in a transient pod, the males will maintain stronger relationships with their mom than mm-hmm. their sisters, which is very interesting. Like in a resident clan, the transient community members often share acoustic repertoire. So they have like some vocalizations that are similar, but it's not nearly as tight-knit with the rest of the community around them because they're transient. They move yeah. around. They don't have that same like tight-knit communications with the rest of their group.
Makes sense.
So that is the first thing. They're just really social and they have friends and they have family and community and it's so cool.
Wow. Love it.
They're also really smart. Like you noted, the name in Danish comes from them stealing food. This is mm-hmm. not the first or the last time they have stolen food.
Yeah.
Alaskan orcas have not only learned how to steal fish from long lines. So a long line is when the fishermen have many baited hooks on mm-hmm. a long line over a stretch of space. But they've also overcome a variety of techniques humans have put together to try and stop them, which is my favorite. So some fishermen place their boats several miles apart and then took turns. Like they communicated over radio, like, hey, you go now, I'm gonna wait, you know, we're gonna get them. We're gonna get them this time. Thinking that if they were really far apart, the whales wouldn't have time to go between the lines to be able to steal the fish.
Mm-hmm.
No. Because the orcas figured that out very quickly and split up into groups.
Wow.
That's amazing.
There are so many stories that I found online. My favorite part about it is a lot of the times they're named. They name the orcas. Like, old Tom keeps stealing fish from us. Like,
okay.
It's great. They have names for the orcas, and they, like, very much are grumpy about the fact that the orcas keep stealing food.
Yeah.
The thing that I really want to talk about is the fact that they are physicists and that they have really great understandings of fluid dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to tell you about two hunting strategies that I've seen on nature documentaries, and I'll put the links to the clips in the doobly-doo. But the first one is the one I think everyone knows about. But imagine you are a seal in the icy, frigid, cold waters of either the Arctic or the Antarctic. I cannot remember which one. And you're just swimming, you're vibing, and you're like, oh shit, you know what? I'm tired. I would like to lie down and have a little bit of sun tanning time. Mm-hmm. And so you find yourself like a little hunk of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you lie down on the ice and you think, ha, I am safe here. No whales can get me here because I am on a piece of ice and they cannot climb the ice. Ha ha ha. This is where their understanding of fluid dynamics is super freaking cool. What they will do is they do something called spy hopping, where if this is the water, they'll just like poke their heads up and then come straight back down again. And it's really cute.
And well, for you, not so much for the seal, right?
No, the seal is fucked at that point.
Yeah.
So many fishermen and other non-scientific researchers had told stories about this hunting ritual happening, but it had never been filmed before until this clip here, where they have a producer who actually was on the boat when they found this behavior.
Oh, and there is this huge wave heading towards the ice floe, this seal, and the seal's like waking up and kind of looking, and the entire boat is just like this, and the wave crashed down, and we just knew, you know, that was it. We just, like, the whole boat just went, wah! And we just knew that was it. This was the behavior, we were gonna get it. And the hunt was on. I mean, these guys, they were on it. It was the most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life.
They spot the seal on the ice floe. It's about like 5 by 5 meters.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell, they swim towards it, generating a wave ahead of them.
Yes.
And that wave washes over the ice floe and flushes the seal into the water, and then the seal is fucked.
Yes.
Is that what's happening?
So they're swimming.
Holy crap.
They're swimming in a lineup, aiming towards the ice, and they're just below the surface of the water. So there's enough, and they're angling slightly down. So the water is being pushed up over them. Mm-hmm. So when they get to the ice float, they dive, and all of that water gets pushed over the ice and then knocks a seal into the water.
That is beyond amazing.
Isn't it so cool?
Wow. Yeah.
It's so cool. This is one of those behaviors that was talked about a lot, but scientists hadn't had in like visual or video evidence of it until this particular expedition, which is so cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right? So this is what I mean. They're physicists, and they also understand tidal flow. This is now specifically one orca. So a small transient pod, so this is just like the mother, her grandma, her kids, are swimming around near where the elephant seals have just given birth. So after about 3 weeks, elephant seals are weaned from their mother's milk, and then the mom just fucks off. The parents literally abandon their kids on the beach, and they never see them again.
Wow.
Because parenting 101, just ditch your kids on a beach. They'll be fine.
Let the strong survive. The weak, you know,
right?
Get eaten by orcas or something, I assume.
Yeah, pretty much. So once they've given birth, they fast for those 3 weeks, and they, you know, feed their pups. And then they just leave. And this is where staying with your kids and educating your children is really fucking vital, because while the elephant seals fucks off, the baby elephant seals have to figure out how to swim because they don't know how to do that yet. They need to figure out how to eat. They don't know how to do that yet. So there is tidal pools on Long Island where there is a rocky barrier that prevents, I don't know, maybe a big fat killer whale from swimming over and like hanging out and all the kids.
Uh-huh.
Until the tide comes up. So there's an example of this female orca who's figured this out, where when the tide goes up For that, like, couple of hours where the tide is high enough for her to swim over the rocky ledge, she goes in, grabs a seal, and brings it back out for her family.
Wow.
And in the video, which I will link, she brings her offspring with her to show them how to do this. And it is very risky as behaviors go, because once the tide goes out, they're trapped there and they will not survive. Mm-hmm. So it's high risk, high reward, but a really fucking clever way of getting access to a great buffet, let's be honest.
Yeah. Hey, kids, I'm going to the tidal pool. Can I bring you something?
Exactly.
That's amazing. I have also seen way back, I saw this nature documentary where you see these seals hanging out on a beach. Mm-hmm. And we're talking not at the water's edge, like far off on the beach. And then the killer whale would just die. Sorry. And orca. Let's not shame them here.
I mean, orca's also not particularly friendly either. They do not have good name choices.
No. And then an orca will just swim full speed at the beach and will like make it fully out of the water, grab one of those seals, and will then ripple back, back into the water with a mouth full of seal. It's just amazing. Wow.
They're absolutely vicious.
Yeah.
It's
Here's the thing to other animals. As far as I know, they do not attack humans in the wild.
There's been a couple of attacks, but they've always been quite clearly just mistaken identity.
Yeah.
Quite like sharks, like orcas sometimes will like bite a human, be like, oh shit, that's not a seal, gross, and then like swim off.
Yeah.
I think there's been a couple cases of that, but no one died from any of those cases. Yeah. All of the deaths happened within captivity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm assuming you've seen blackfish.
I have, yeah.
And understanding a little bit more about how complex the family structures are and understanding that there is dialects, there is language, it makes so much more sense that captive orcas do not do well together because they're not part of the same pods, they're not part of the same mantra lines, they probably don't share language, which is one of the reasons in which Tilikum was really bullied in captivity because he didn't have any of the understanding of the language of the pod that he was forced to be part of.
Yeah, I have a really shameful secret. About 25 years ago, I went to one of those orca shows at SeaWorld in Orlando.
Shame.
Shame on me, I know. I would never do it again, knowing what I know now. Yeah. Back then, there wasn't that conversation about it. But I will say this, the show was amazing. It was so cool what they can train these animals to do.
Yeah.
And just the sheer size of them makes it an experience different from a sea lion show or a dolphin show. I'm glad they're facing them out.
In case you're wondering about the size, dear listener, an average female adult can weigh anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 kilograms. Mm-hmm. The length of them, an average male, is between 6 to 8 meters, and the average female is from 5 to 7 meters. So there are fucking huge creatures.
Yeah, those are some big-ass animals.
Yeah.
The finale of the show, I still remember that, was that one of the trainers jumped in the water. And one of the orcas swims up behind her, pushes her from the feet, and then the orca jumps fully out of the water with the trainer on his nose. And then they both fall back into the water. That was an amazing thing to train an orca to do. And it looks seriously cool.
Well, we have video evidence of it happening, and now we can, like, watch the video.
Exactly.
We don't need to make them do that anymore.
Exactly.
So, the reason I want to talk about orcas today. So, I've told you about their incredible intelligence in terms of being able to steal food from us, which I find absolutely hilarious. I've told you about their understanding of water and fluid dynamics and their incredibly awesome social structures. But the reason why I'm particularly interested in orcas at the moment is because there was a Radiolab episode relatively recently about orcas and humpback whales. And it reminded me how much I fucking love orcas. This episode of Radiolab had a really interesting narrative in it. So quite similarly to the story about the how they hunt by creating waves, some scientists had noticed an orca pod was hunting at some seal or some animal that was not a humpback whale. And they noticed a bunch of humpback whales came and disrupted the hunt.
What?
And started making waves and like pushing the orca away and protecting this young seal from being killed. So what orcas do is they'll like take the seal or the calf or whatever it is that they're hunting and bring it underwater and then hold it underwater until it drowns. And then they'll eat it. And so these humpback whales kept pushing the orca away, letting the young seal come to breathe. Eventually, in this particular case that these scientists saw, the whale did the baby calf did not survive and ended up drowning. Okay. But then after the calf was drowned, instead of leaving it alone, like, okay, you've lost the battle, move on with your life, the humpback whale stayed for hours after the fact, preventing the orcas from eating the dead body. And scientists were like, the fuck is going on here?
A lot of scientific discoveries start with that specific question. The fuck?
So they did a call out to other fishermen and scientists. Has anyone else noticed this behavior? Mm-hmm. And the answer was, oh, yeah, I saw that as well. I saw it here. They were protecting a gray whale calf. They were protecting a seal. They were protecting they were protecting a humpback whale calf. There were so many instances from all over the world, because again, cosmopolitan species, of humpback whales disrupting the hunting, regardless of the animal being hunted. So, do you think this is A, altruism on the humpback whale's part, or B, some weird survival instinct that we don't fully understand yet?
I'm going to go with option B.
Yeah.
My best guess. If you let the orcas hunt, maybe next they're coming for your calf in that area, right? But if you teach them, not in our hood, no seals, no seal pups, no nothing, move along.
Yep.
If you raise the cost of feeding in your area, maybe the orcas will go somewhere else, and maybe that will ultimately save, down the road, save one of your offspring. Is that what's going on?
Ding, 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 ding. That is the correct answer, my friend.
Yes! Nailed it.
Interestingly, when this story first got published, it was called altruism. And a lot of pop science shows completely ate this up because we love that story. Mm-hmm. Humpback whales altruistically saving other creatures when it's not for them. Oh my God, we love it. But the thing is, humpback whales don't have the best vision. They don't have the best eyesight. They're also not that smart. They are no orca. And so it is exactly what you said. Like, they will just try and make orcas hunting just lives difficult, just in case it's a humpback calf.
Yeah.
Because one day it might be. Whales also want to look after their own. It might be a distant relative. It might be your cousin, sister's son or something. So you want to make sure that that humpback whale also makes it to adulthood.
I can see that. And I can see the humpback whales going, oh my God, is that part of orcas attacking Steve?
Oh my God.
Let's get Steve.
Steve.
Yeah. It's not Steve. It's not Alan. Steve. Yeah, never mind. Yeah. In that case, what else? Let's get him anyway, the bastards. Yeah.
While we're here, we might as well.
Yeah.
I just think it's so cool and it's so interesting, particularly because when it originally came out, people were thinking, ooh, altruism. And now we're like, no, not so smart and also kind of blind.
And just to take that a little further, I think a lot of what we call altruism in humans evolved exactly the same way. Human beings absolutely have an instinct for altruism, no doubt about it. But where did we get that? Did we just, develop the sense of what's morally right or wrong? No, it's probably just that behaviors that we consider altruistic now were good for our survival, maybe not as individuals, but certainly as tribes or societies. And societies that had that instinct for altruism did better than those who did not. I think you could believably call it altruism or proto-altruism, even in humpback whales, even if they're not as smart as orcas.
No.
Yeah. I know there are cases of dolphins helping humans who are like drowning or something. Are there similar cases with orcas?
All of the stories that I've read about them is them stealing food.
Well, I just Googled this. Moment of Google. There's a PBS article, How the Killer Whale, there's the name again, avoids eating people, helped 19th century whalers and became public enemy number one. So they help each other. If an orca isn't breathing, another orca might lift it up to hold it out of the water until it regains consciousness. Killer whales have also helped humans hunt. In North America and Australia, there are stories of orcas herding fish and even other whales to make it easier for fishermen to catch them.
I wonder if that was a case of, like, if you hold them captive, I can eat them more efficiently.
We're going to link to this article, the doobly-doo. One pod stationed far out to sea would drive whales in towards the coast. Another pod would attack the whale, and another pod would be stationed ahead of the whale in case it broke loose. You cover the exits.
Pretty much. They're really fucking smart. It's really cool.
That's a smart.
Smart. Smart. Cool. So that was fun facts about orcas. I think they are one of the coolest species in the world.
Can I add one more reason why orcas are super cool?
Yes, please.
They look amazing.
Aren't they beautiful?
They are. The black and white, the streamlined design, the fin on top and on the back.
They just look beautiful.
They look sleek and deadly and amazing and powerful.
And they are. They're so cool. So yeah, that was me rambling about orcas for like 40 minutes. I hope you enjoyed. Alex, what was your favorite fun fact about orcas today?
Definitely how smart they are. I knew they were smart, right? Just the sheer level of intelligence and how they can work together and work together with other species and how they can learn. I think that's just amazing. And of course, that connected with their family structure, where the older females are around to teach the younger animals, which is why they can learn a lot of these behaviors. I think that's phenomenal. I have gained even more appreciation for orcas than I had before.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to put a bunch of different things in the doobly-doo, including a bunch of links to videos that I love about orcas from the BBC and other nature documentaries, but also from one of my favorite YouTube channels called Tier Zoo, which is the worst name to say out loud because it doesn't sound like words, but tier as in tier list.
Ah, okay.
And then zoo as in animals.
Yeah.
Where this is a YouTube channel that takes animals and breaks down their characteristics as if they were video game characters and then ranks them on a tier list. It's a really fun channel and it's a really nice way of learning more about animals in a very stupid way, which I love.
They're basically turning them into Pokemon.
Yes, exactly that. So I'll put the dolphins episode on there because obviously orcas are dolphins.
If you say so.
So I'll put that video in the link as well. Highly recommend that one. I really do love Tier Zoo. I think they're such a great channel and a really fun way to learn about animals. And I love learning about animals. Oh my God, it's one of my favorite things ever.
You do? You never seen an episode of that.
And so what about you, dear listener? What do you think about orcas? Do you have any questions or did we leave out something awesome about them? Like, I didn't mention Free Willy. I don't know if I needed to mention Free Willy, but I didn't mention Free Willy. Go to our website or Instagram at electricenthusiasm.com and tell me why I should have included Free Willy in this episode.
I've actually not seen Free Willy.
I mean, Oh my God.
Never seen it, yeah.
I had the VCR tape as a kid, and I think I watched it 1,000 times. I wanted to be that kid so bad.
Mm-hmm.
They got to play with an orca. So cool. Incidentally, the orca that was in that movie called Keiko was a Norwegian orca that was in a Norwegian aquarium, then got sold to a Canadian one, then got sold to a Mexican one, where they got renamed with a Japanese name, then got cast in the movie. And then after they got cast in the movie as the protagonist, there was a huge swell of people being like, you can't have this orca in captivity. It's so cool. Like, the whole thing in the movie is to free this whale. And so they freed Keiko back into Norwegian waters, where it died a year later. Because it wasn't acclimatized to being in the wild. And it was one of the first cases of us trying to release an orca back into the wild without really understanding how to do that correctly. And so it had pneumonia within a year and died.
Okay, that's sad.
I just ruined someone's childhood. I mean, it ruined mine to find that out. So, you know.
I would imagine.
Anyways.
Yes, for the moment of meta, I know you issued a challenge in our last episode, Katie, but it's only 3 days since we recorded it, so I haven't had a chance to say yes to a new adventure yet. I agree, it's an awesome way to promote enthusiasm, is to go along with something new when somebody suggested. I haven't had the chance yet. I am going on vacation next week, and I'm sure that will afford me a chance to try something brand new. But in the meantime, I have an idea for a very, very short moment of meta. I thought we should take this chance to officially welcome Antoine's suggestion for the 10th enthusiasm.
Yeah, sure, let's do that.
So throughout our 41 episodes, it is now, this is the 41st episode, we've suggested these ideas for commandments of enthusiasm, how to be more enthusiastic, tips and ideas. We were up to 9. And we were looking for number 10, and people gave us great suggestions, but then Antoine nailed it, and enthusiasm number 10 obviously needed to be subscribe to the podcast.
I mean, it is a great way to promote enthusiasm.
Yes. Yes, in yourself and in others. That's what I wanted to do with this Mona Meta. All of the other enthusiasms have been officially proposed and accepted in a previous moment of meta. That's so true. I would like to propose that the 10th enthusiasm is thou shalt subscribe to the podcast.
I'll make the graphic this afternoon.
There you go. Beautiful. We have 10. I think that's a nice even set.
And now we stop, right?
And now I mean, the problem is if we make one more, then we have, you know, then we're, no, then we have many. To make it to 50 or 20. Yeah, too many enthusiasms, right?
I think going forward, we should look for examples of enthusiasms in action. One of the ways in which it's very useful to understand enthusiasm, how to promote enthusiasm, is with examples. And I feel like enthusiasms in action is a great way to do that.
Yes. And of course, any of our listeners have a good example of applying one of these. Please tell us all about it and share your stories. I am reminded of the scene in the History of the World, Mel Brooks' History of the World. Have you seen that?
Nope.
Okay. Moses comes down from the mountain with 3 stone tablets. And he goes, God gave me these 15. And then he drops one of the stone tablets. These 10 commandments.
Sounds very Monty Python.
It's very Mel Brooks. Very Mel Brooks. Yeah. Awesome. Moment of math.
Oh my gosh. My brain did the thing where I got Mel Brooks and Mel Gibson mixed up. I was like, that doesn't sound very Mel Gibson. That sounds very Mel Brooks.
Let's say Mel Gibson's approach to biblical stuff has been a lot more serious than Mel Brooks's. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a tiny little bit. Oh
man, Spaceballs is a great movie though.
Yes. We do actually have a little bit of roundup.
Ooh, exciting.
So 3 episodes ago, you talked about the epic Indian action movie RRR, Rise, Roar, and Revolt, which I have since seen and is indeed amazing and insane and crazy and so good. So good. And that episode actually got a lot of views on our YouTube channel, and we got some great comments. And I just want you to read this one comment.
The comment reads, Indians don't get offended on wrong name pronunciation, Katie. You're good. Thank you so much for that.
Because you did struggle a little bit with some of that.
I'm not linguistically gifted. I try, but I'm not. That's not a skill set I own in this world. But yeah. I appreciate it. Who was the commenter? Thank them by name.
Here. EDP. Yeah.
Thank you very much, EDP. I appreciate you saying that I'm good. I feel like if someone enjoyed this episode of the podcast, the next obvious one to go to is the one with Yo. Surely.
Yeah, the 2 episodes we did with Yo.
Yes.
Yes. In one of them, we talk about marine animals, and the other one was weird animal sex habits.
Because that's one of my favorite topics of discussion. It's so good.
Giraffe pee and why you should drink it and that kind of thing. Yeah, I clear. Those are great. Also, the bees episode, which is also you nerding out about an animal.
I just like animals, okay?
Animals are amazing. I feel like at some point I need to bring an animal to the table here.
I feel like you're actually going to bring an animal to the table. When you phrase it like that, I'm just like, please, yes, that'd be amazing.
An actual animal to the table, yeah. Well, I would have said I'm super enthusiastic about sea otters, but then that got ruined by Yol in our...
Hey, enthusiasm number, I don't remember what. You can be enthusiastic about something that's problematic. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I still like RuPaul. They're terrible.
Yeah. So those were definitely our other animal episodes. Yes. Marine animals, animal, weird animal mating habits, and bees.
Every time I talk about animals, I do feel like I have regressed to the 8-year-old version of me that would watch Animal Planet every morning and was just like, Mom, did you know that? Like, that was definitely me as a kid. I was that obnoxious kid that had so many animal facts.
That's so amazing. Cool.
And then I found Pokemon, and then I had Pokemon facts. It was great. We hope you enjoyed sharing some of our enthusiasms in this episode. Please visit our website, electricenthusiasm.com, or find us on Instagram at electricenthusiasm to discover more episodes or leave a comment.
And now, dear listener, it's your turn to go kick a seal off your speedboat.
Use fluid dynamics. Make a wave.
Exactly.